Support for this public radio podcast comes from Mellon Financial Corporation, helping financially successful individuals and families protect and maximize their assets through the practice of wealth management. Mellon.com. And by A.G. Edwards, caring for nest eggs for more than 120 years with a commitment to provide objective financial advice. Marketplace is supported by Putnam Investments, dedicated to a prudent approach to investing. Produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Let's do a little economic policy make-believe, just for the heck of it. What if you could write the federal budget, take about $3 trillion and decide who gets what? The House took its first step in the 2008 budget cycle today, and you know what? Congress knows how to ignore reality just like the rest of us. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace.
Sustainability coverage is supported in part by the Candida Sustainability Fund of the Tides Foundation, furthering values that contribute to a healthy planet. Marketplace is also supported by T. Rowe Price, mutual funds, IRAs, and college savings. T. Rowe Price, invest with confidence. 1-877-T-ROWE-PRICE or TRowePrice.com.
From the studios of KUNC in Greeley, Colorado, I'm Kai Rizdahl. Thanks for being here on this Thursday. It's the 29th of March. The House passed its 2008 budget resolution today. It's the first full spending package the Democrats have had a chance to build from the ground up since they took over. And it promises boosts in spending for education, health care, and national security. But Marketplace's Hillary Wackay reports from Washington there's a $50 billion question mark the majority party's trying very hard not to talk about.
Democrats tout their budget as a responsible plan that puts children and family first. Speaker of the House Nancy Pelosi was emphatic in her support.
It does it all in a fiscally sound way. No new deficit spending. Pay as you go.
And there's the $50 billion hitch in the giddy-up, paying for every dollar spent with a dollar cut someplace else. If the alternative minimum tax is allowed to hum along, an estimated 19 million additional American families will pay dramatically higher taxes in 2007. To spare the middle class, the Democrats will have to find $50 billion. Maya McGinnis is with the Committee for a Responsible Federal Budget. She predicts that'll be a tough one.
I think the likely solution will have the pieces of increasing taxes on the well-off, and using that new revenue to offset lifting the alternative minimum tax off of the backs of many of those in the middle class. Still, it's going to be hard to rejigger the tax package in a way that all of the costs are offset.
And truth be told, pay-as-you-go has a loophole. Robert Bixby is the executive director of the Concord Coalition, a nonpartisan group that backs deficit reduction.
But as a practical matter, I think there are enough votes probably to waive PAYGO to prevent such an increase from going into effect if they can't find the offsets.
Which means to help the middle class, more red ink will likely be added to the deficit. So which promise will the Democrats keep? Back the middle class or balance the budget? Keeping both will surely lead to a big internal fight. A conference committee now takes the House and Senate versions and hammers out a budget blueprint for legislators to follow. Maybe they can find the $50 billion. In Washington, I'm Hillary Wackay for Marketplace.
Part of the premise behind any congressional budget bill is that the economy is going to keep on growing. And we got an update on fourth quarter gross domestic product this morning. It was a touch better than the last time we looked, up 0.3% to 2.5% on an annual basis. This next item may or may not be just the accessory you've been dreaming about for your next car. It probably won't be the thing that saves Detroit, but satellite television's coming to the minivan. Chrysler announced today it's made a deal with Sirius to offer kid-friendly channels like Disney and Nickelodeon on some of its 2008 models. If you're remembering right about now that Chrysler's in some pretty deep financial trouble and that Sirius is trying to team up with that other satellite radio outfit, XM, to cut costs, then you're probably also wondering why two struggling companies would be making a deal like this. Helen Palmer at WGBH in Boston has the story.
As Chrysler sees it, this is straightforward product enhancement.
We've been the leader in the minivan market since we started it years 20 years ago, and our intent is basically to please customers.
Chrysler's Michael Caine says providing Nickelodeon and the Cartoon Network will keep the kids quiet, and it's what minivan-driving soccer moms want. And people who know cars think it's a great strategy. Paul Eisenstein edits an online magazine, thecarconnection.com.
It's a very smart move by a company that knows its market. I think that it's going to play out very successfully for them.
Media watchers also call this a step forward. John Carroll teaches mass communication at Boston University. He says portable media is big business.
I think what Sirius is looking to do here is to provide something that's a value-added feature, reach a potential new market, and also perhaps as a hedge against the possibility that this merger with XM will not go through.
XM's the other satellite radio company. Sirius says there's enough bandwidth to provide three family TV channels to Chrysler. They have an exclusive deal with the company. The whole package will add $470 to the price of a new minivan. After the first year, it'll cost $19.95 a month, which is probably a small price to pay for peace in the back seat. Paul Eisenstein thinks this innovation will spread across the fleet, even to luxury cars.
There's a lot of people who get chauffeured around that would love to have television in the back, if nothing else, so that they can watch the stock market reports.
The rest of you can listen to Marketplace. In Boston, this is Helen Palmer for Marketplace.
It's a sign of the times that most of us are being more careful about what we put in our bodies. But what about what we put on our bodies? All those lotions, creams, and ointments aren't exactly all natural. And some products, cosmetics especially, might be downright bad for you. Activists have been after makeup manufacturers to get rid of the toxins, and at least one of them is listening. A company named OPI is one of the biggest makers of nail polish in the world. It announced today it's removing some chemicals that could be harmful. We asked Marketplace's Jeff Tyler if he'd head out to a salon and get a manicure for us, you know, just to check it out. He said, nah, I'll just do the story.
Toluene is a solvent used to make nail polish flow more evenly, but it also has a potential downside.
Toluene is a chemical that's linked to reproductive problems and potentially birth defects.
That's Alexandra Gorman with the advocacy group Women's Voices for the Earth. Leading manufacturer OPI Products is phasing out toluene from its line. Safety concerns about another chemical, known as DBP, prompted the company to remove it last year. But other nail polishes and thickeners still contain potentially harmful chemicals, such as formaldehyde. Gorman says customers should take notice, but she's more concerned for the safety of the estimated 380,000 professional nail technicians.
The real concern is for the workers, because they're the ones who are exposed consistently. They're working with these chemicals day in and day out, so they get the most concentrated dose.
Almost all the salon employees are women, and a high proportion are Vietnamese. At Harmony Nail and Spa in Los Angeles, manager Mai Mylar says she hears about health concerns at her salon.
A lot of employees ask me questions like, would it affect my health? Would I have cancer?
Mylar says the move to remove toxins was necessary if OPI wants to keep her business.
If they would not change anything like a chemical that harm, I would not going to use OPI at all in our shop.
Advocate Alexandra Gorman would like to see federal regulators take a closer look at the chemicals used in the industry to be sure they're safe. In Los Angeles, I'm Jeff Tyler for Marketplace.
There was some pushing and shoving among the bulls and the bears on Wall Street today. Investors were trying to decide which was more important, rising oil prices, geopolitics, or some corporate merger talk. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. Saints are going to stay on in New Orleans. The team in the state of Louisiana announced earlier this week they've agreed on changes in their contract. It'll keep the team in the Superdome through the 2010 season. And if they keep winning the way they did last year, the Saints might lend some more civic pride to a city still rebuilding from Hurricane Katrina. A lot of New Orleanians stuck it out after that storm 18 months ago. Others are settling there for the first time. New arrivals like Melanie Peoples.
Living in New Orleans isn't easy. If you're going to do it, you need to know certain things about yourself. Are you the kind of person who prefers cosmetic beauty over personality? Do you need bright, clean, cheery buildings? Can you wait 3 weeks for a phone? That's right, 3 weeks for a phone. That's how long I waited. And I'm not living in a house that flooded or had to be rewired. My place stayed dry. And, did I mention? It's right across the street from the phone company. Then there's the grocery situation. For whatever reason, there just aren't many grocery stores in this city. Oh, I guess I could drive out to the suburbs, but then there's traffic, which I also don't understand. If New Orleans lost half its residents, why is there stop and go on the interstate? I drove out for milk once and ended up so irritated at confusing intersections and missing street signs, I decided we could just do without and turned around. But dairy is important, so against warnings, I tried the closest thing to a grocery for us and a lot of New Orleans, the Super Walmart. It's big, loud, and packed. The floor is dirty and a third of the lights are burnt out. It's depressing. No one makes conversation over cauliflower here. We do not linger over lima beans. We just want to get out. This isn't how it should be. Doesn't Walmart know what these people have been through? If anyone deserves a nice place to shop, it's New Orleans. I start mentally composing a letter to the company's headquarters. I'm feverish with injustice by the time I've navigated the trash and empty liquor bottles in the parking lot on my way back to the car. Then I feel this nagging sensation, like I've seen this store before. This parking lot, those doors. And then it hits me. I know where I've seen it. This is the Walmart I saw on television being looted just after the hurricane. The one where people were liberating televisions and DVDs. I stop composing my letter to Arkansas and mentally throw it in the trash, thinking, I guess I'm just lucky to have a store at all. Then on the drive home, the street just suddenly changes from one way heading north to one way heading south, and I'm staring at two lanes of cars directly in front of me. How weird is that? Well, actually, not that weird in New Orleans. I detour right and then left and past the bank where I tried to open a new checking account but couldn't because the bank's computers were down. But I did get some good advice there. The bank lady warned me not to go to the DMV for a new driver's license on a Monday, Friday, or the day after any holiday. If I avoid these days, she says it should only take 4 hours to get a new license. I think I'm just going to keep my out-of-state license. The lady at Allstate, where I can't get home insurance, says to expect my car insurance to cost twice as much here as where I used to live in Florida. It wears you down. But oh, the history in this town. And the food. The way strangers call you baby. And the music. Most days, I come away thinking this city's hassles are a test. You have to prove your worth. And when you do, the subtle splendors of New Orleans open themselves to you. Where else in America do they name streets after goddesses of poetry and song? In New Orleans, I'm Melanie Peoples for Marketplace.
And now, let's do the numbers. No, it don't mean a thing if it ain't got that swing. The Dow Industrials rose 48 points today, about 0.4% to close at 12,348. The NASDAQ was basically flat, finishing at 2417. The S&P 500 ticked up 5 points, about a third of 1%, to end at 1422. Uncertainty over Iran weighed on the markets today. Crude oil prices bubbled up to more than $66 a barrel. Tech stocks were weak. Trading in Dell was stopped this afternoon after the company said it found accounting errors and evidence of misconduct. Dell closed up nearly 0.2%. Cisco Systems slipped about 1%. Wireless equipment company Qualcomm fell nearly 0.6%. Tempering the gloom were government figures showing better than expected economic growth and news of several mergers. U.S. Steel will buy Lone Star Technologies for just over $2 billion. You're listening to Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by Putnam Investments. Since 1937, supporting the role that an experienced financial advisor can play in building a well-rounded financial program. Conversations from the Corner Office, Dialogues with Top CEOs, is supported by the Society for Human Resource Management, HR, Leading People, Leading Organizations, shrm.org.
Want to hear something on Marketplace again? Help is as near as your home computer. To find audio archives of past programs and additional special features, just go to the internet and log on to our website. The information you need when you need it is only a few clicks away. Just head over to marketplace.org.
From the Marketplace Statebook, here's a glance at what's coming up Friday. In Washington, the Commerce Department reports on personal income and spending for February. President Bush is scheduled to visit Walter Reed Army Medical Center. And a history note on an important instrument of communication. Hyman Lippmann patented the first pencil with an eraser on top on March 30, 1858. The patent was later revoked because he only combined two things that already existed. How would we do our SATs without it? I'm Michelle Phillippe.
This is Marketplace from American Public Media. I'm Kai Rizdal. Both President Bush and Fed Chairman Ben Bernanke have addressed our twin economic gaps recently. Not the ones you might immediately think of, the budget and trade deficits. They were talking about wage and income disparities. Marketplace's Steve Tripoli reports now on some new analysis that shows those gaps are widening.
University of California economist Emmanuel Saez says that the top slice of families really widened their income lead for the 3 years through 2005.
Every year, the top 1% families have gained 10%. The remaining 99% of families have seen very, very small gain of only 1.2% per year.
It's even more stark than it sounds. Because of that bottom 99%, only the top 9% logged any significant gains. Saez says the best paid 1% have also bumped up their slice of the nation's annual income.
Their share of income has increased from about 8% in the 1970s to almost 20% today.
The top 300,000 Americans now earn as much income as the bottom 150 million. By coincidence today, the libertarian Ayn Rand Institute released an article called In Defense of Income Inequality. Libertarians believe in an almost completely unregulated marketplace. The article's author, Peter Schwartz, says the growing gaps are the way markets should work.
The same reason that a computer costs more than a paperclip is the reason that Bill Gates makes more money than a janitor.
In other words, the people who add the most value deserve the biggest rewards, even if their slice of the pie keeps growing dramatically. Schwartz rejected the often heard argument that the growth in these gaps has accelerated to the point of unfairness. Those are envious egalitarians talking, he says, and he's not using egalitarian as a compliment. I'm Steve Tripoli for Marketplace.
The more traditional definition of egalitarian might have something to do with everybody having an even chance at success and living the American middle-class dream. Commentator Amelia Tiagi was at a family reunion in Oklahoma not too long ago, which made her realize that whether the middle class feels squeezed depends on where you are.
As we ate peach cobbler and took turns rocking my cousin's new baby, it finally struck me there really are two Americas. But the issues that divide us aren't what you'd think. We watch the same movies, follow the same sports teams, and send our kids to public schools where the same subjects are taught. Nor are we divided by hot-button issues like gay marriage or abortion. Indeed, no one even bothered to mention those issues around the picnic table. The real difference is money, and that great American dream, owning a home. On the coasts, average incomes are higher, but just a bit. In Los Angeles, an average family makes about 15% more than in Oklahoma City. But an average home in Los Angeles costs 600% more than in Oklahoma City. My cousin, who works as a skilled mechanic in Fort Worth, just built a brand new 3-bedroom house on a 2-acre lot. Here in Los Angeles, that same house would be out of reach for most doctors and lawyers. In L.A., an average mechanic or teacher or policeman would have to win the lottery to buy a new home, much less a house with a 3-car garage on a wooded 2-acre lot. Is it just a coincidence that the great housing divide tends to line up along blue state, red state lines? Maybe the message from the left, that the middle class is squeezed and the government ought to do something about it, resonates to an average guy on the coasts who can't afford to buy a house like the one he grew up in. And maybe the message from the right, that the free market economy is working just fine, rings true when you sit on the front porch of a nice new house. Maybe we have one culture, but two economic realities. Maybe what divides us is money.
Amelia Tiagi is co-founder of the Business Talent Group. Take a second to send us your thoughts. Go to marketplace.org and click on the link that says contact. The housing market's having its troubles. Wall Street's jittery, you could safely say. But by all appearances, the job market's chugging right along. The Labor Department reported today the number of Americans filing new claims for unemployment benefits dropped by a larger than expected 10,000 last week. Still, those numbers don't count the thousands who get fired every day. There's a new documentary on Showtime tonight about the experience of getting the boot. John Brady has this review of Fired.
Americans love watching losers. Singers who stink, second-rate schemers who get the island heave-ho, wannabe CEOs who get fired by the Donald. Thankfully, Annabelle Gurwitch's documentary Fired is different. It doesn't laugh at losers, it sympathizes with them. Her film is simultaneously a delightful and aggravating look at getting canned. Here's the story in brief. Gurwitch's agent calls. She's been cast in the latest Woody Allen play. Excitement ensues. But there's a rub. After a few rehearsals, it's clear that Allen hates Gurwitch's acting. He fires her. Ouch. Gurwitch starts drinking before noon. Not just beer, but the hard stuff. Happily, though, our heroine has pluck. She produces a show about getting fired, featuring her Hollywood friends telling stories about unemployment. It's a hit. And the rest is history. Or at least a small cottage industry that includes a book and this documentary.
I did a number of things in the 80s that I'm not proud of. But there's one thing I did that was so heinous, I've never actually told anyone about it. In 1985, I wrote for the TV show The Facts of Life.
That's Andy Borowitz, beginning the story of how he lost his first television job. Borowitz is joined by a cavalcade of other stars who share their pink slip stories. They're funny and entertaining, and they make Fired delightful. But here's the aggravating part. Gurwitch isn't satisfied with tales of Tinseltown woe. She wants to be down with the little people, too. So she interviews people like this guy, who suffered a real blow.
Just, you know, 12 years at a place I loved working for, and
wow.
All of a sudden, one day, you know, it just stops. And
Gurwitch right acts now, like the Will Rogers of outsourcing. For this to work, we have to believe that she shares something with the regular people. But she got fired by Woody Allen. And she gets to complain about the experience to Tim Allen. So it's hard to swallow that she really has all that much in common with the rest of us. Watch Fired. It's genuinely funny. Just don't expect to learn much about what it really means when people, especially those out of the limelight, lose their jobs.
John Brady is a writer living in Los Angeles. Just for the record, he says he's never been handed a pink slip. You can see the documentary Fired on Showtime tonight. Michael Phelps is 4 for 4 at the Swimming World Championships that are being held in Melbourne, Australia this week. He won his fourth gold medal today, and he's set 3 world records so far. Not that you'd be reasonably expected to know any of that, with March Madness going on and baseball's opening day just around the corner. Swimmers get plenty of attention during the Olympics, but otherwise the sport suffers from 4-year dry spells. Our Business of Sports analyst Diana Nyad's covering the coverage. Hey, Diana.
Kai, how's it going?
I'm all right. You know, you feel bad for these swimmers. I mean, it's the World Championships, and yet almost nobody's paying attention.
Well, you know, it's true, and it's been true forever, hasn't it? It's very similar to track and field. At the Olympic Games, every Summer Olympic Games, the first half of the games, swimming is the jewel. Second half of the games, track and field is the jewel. But in this country, those sports basically fly off the map. And I think you and I could take microphones and go around to every city and town in America and ask 100 people in every city and town in America, just name me one American swimmer. Just name me one. And they'll say Mark Spitz. And we'll say, no, we mean a swimmer from today. And they can't come up with probably the greatest swimmer who's ever lived, greater than Mark Spitz. Who's Michael Phelps? But we just don't track swimming.
Forget about the microphones and you and me taking them around. Is anybody taking television cameras down to the world?
I'll give you an example. NBC is going to cover an event that's going to happen right after the Worlds. It's called, you know, the Duel in the Pool. Okay? And it takes the greatest Australian swimmers, the greatest American swimmers, who are the two superpowers in swimming today. They're going to capture that event on April 3rd, which happens right after the World Championships is over. And they're going to telecast it on April 21st and 22nd. Now, I used to work for the Wide World of Sports back in the day. And that's when we did the World Table Tennis Championships. championships in the world, wrist wrestling championships, and nobody cared if they happened 6 weeks before because it was just a televised event. But in this day and age of the internet, live sports are the only way we follow sports. So it doesn't bode well for an event to air 3 weeks after it happens, as if nobody followed it in the first place and nobody cares. And believe me, nobody is watching the World Swimming Championships on television. The king of sports, ESPN, for instance, on day three of the event this week, three world records went down. But you listen to ESPN, 5 seconds. I counted it. 5 seconds of coverage.
So you take a five-second thing on ESPN, you add it to a three-week tape delay, and I think what you get on the other side of the equation is probably $0 from corporate sponsorships.
Well, you would think that because it's not a very big piece of the pie in this country. But on the other hand, it takes a slice. I mean, there are some 100 million people who swim regularly, Kai. If 100 million people are heading out to do some laps in the pool, take a dip in the ocean, Speedo and Nike and Reebok and all the swimsuit makers want to make sure that they're wearing their suits. So, Nike, for instance, gave Cullen Jones, he's the first African-American ever to hold a world record in swimming. He's doing very well down in Melbourne as well. They gave Cullen Jones last August, Nike did, $2 million over 7 years. Now, when we, talk about NFL players, that would mm-hmm. be just a laughable contract, wouldn't it? But for a swimmer, $2 million over 7 years is something. So there is, as I say, a sliver of the pie to be divided up. And there are a few corporate sponsors who want in for the sport of swimming.
Diana Nyad knows a whole lot about swimming herself. If you don't believe me, just check the record book. She does the business of sports for us. Diana, thanks a lot.
Kai, thank you.
Marketplace is produced in association with the University of Southern California's Annenberg School for Communication.
This final note.
We're sorry. You have reached a number that has been disconnected or is no longer in service. Please check the number and try your call again.
We all get frustrated when our calls don't go through, so you can sympathize with journalists who called into a teleconference today and heard, well, they heard nothing. The government was announcing the biggest telecommunications contract in history, $48 billion to AT&T, Quest, and Verizon. But reporters were shut out of that announcement for about 20 minutes due to a phone glitch. Officials wouldn't comment on what happened, but they did apologize later. No word from AT&T or Quest or Verizon on possible money-back guarantees. And that is Marketplace from American Public Media. Today, the Dow rose 48 points, 0.4%. The NASDAQ was flat. The S&P 500 up 5 points, about 0.3% there. Our thanks today to the staff here at KUNC. Our editors back home in Los Angeles include John Buckley, Margaret Koval, Karen Lowe, Stacey Vanek-Smith, and Lisa Tucker. Next time on this program, is campaign spending out of control already?
If we look at the first quarter in 2003, there was $31 million in all raised by all of the candidates. I expect in this election cycle we're going to see 4 to 5 times that amount.
So the answer is yes, it is. I'm Kai Rizdal. Hope you can join us for that tomorrow.
American Public Media.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.